Hello and welcome to the 14th episode of the Hope Illuminated Podcast, your source for the stories, science, and strategies of suicide prevention, mental health promotion, and resilience, where we live, learn, and work. I'm your host, Dr. Sally Spencer Thomas, and I'm on a life mission to empower communities with solutions that help people overcome isolation and despair and rekindle a passion for living. Each episode, we're joined by international experts who inspire hope and offer real guidance. I think I heard Jorge. Hello, Jorge. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. I'm so glad you were able to join us. Jorge and I'll give his introduction in just a moment. He's calling us from Southern California today, and we'll be talking about the importance of owning trauma and integrating and understanding and making meaning out of the traumas in our lives as a form of reclaiming resilience. I've met Jorge at the Dad Summit 2.0 a couple of months ago, and I tell you, I was absolutely emotionally overwhelmed and inspired by his very compelling story. So we have that coming in just a bit. I think trauma has been on a lot of our minds lately as we've been watching the news and watching the effects of the zero tolerance policy and the forcible separation of children from their parents at the U.S.-Mexico border this week. And I just wanted to emphasize that the American Association of Suicidology put out a formal statement stating that we are incredibly concerned about these practices, as we know that this form of trauma, in particular, separating children from their families under traumatic conditions, is highly likely to cause suicide crises among those children. We have tremendous amounts of evidence that early adverse childhood events like this, when there is lack of mental health care and other forms of support, can lead to increased suicide risk, not just in the immediate aftermath, but for an incredibly long term for those children. So we're hopeful that things will change soon. We're going to talk today about trauma and how it impacts self-worth. We know that the anxiety aftermath of trauma that can linger with people is deeply embedded sometimes in their psyche, and that often results in avoidance responses that can really decrease the quality of life and increase despair for people who are not able to work through that trauma. The good news is that we have quite a bit of research supporting a number of mental health treatments for trauma, including various forms of exposure therapy and other forms of cognitive behavioral therapy that are very effective. But today we're going to be talking about the importance of building community and kind of really understanding and integrating trauma into the narrative of our lives in a very redemptive way. I am so pleased, and Jorge, you gotta forgive me if I don't get your name right. I'm gonna try my best. Jorge Narvaez. Oh, am I close?
That's close.
Oh no, correct me. I want to get it right. Say it again.
It's Narvaez.
Narvaez. I was close, but not quite there. I'll keep working on it. Jorge is joining me, and Jorge is originally from Guadalajara, but currently lives. Are you currently still living in San Diego? Is that correct? San Diego area.
Yes, I'm currently still living in San Diego. Yeah.
Cool. And he has such an incredible story that we'll get to hear today. But just briefly, he went from a teen father to meeting Barack Obama and being on the Ellen Show and all of these incredibly high-profile engagements. And is really internationally known for his YouTube channel, Reality Changers, where there was one particular video, and now there has been many, but of you singing with your daughter that just caught the world's attention. And what I really appreciate about you and your work, Jorge, is that you really focus on the power of community through your medium of art as a way to build connection, provide healing and empowerment and advocacy, specifically around fatherhood, which is, men's mental health is near and dear to my heart. So to see someone use their creativity and their community to do this is pretty awesome. So let's just start wherever you want to start. I'd love to know a little bit about, you know, your life path and kind of what brought you to your work today and what you're currently working on. So wherever you want to start, share a little bit about you.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on your show. And honestly, you know, this is, in my opinion, the perfect time to have this conversation. There's a lot going on in our country, and I think it's important to really have dialogue with as many people as possible about the importance of wellness programs and also the importance of creating a support system for each other, you know, especially through this time. There are children committing suicide. There's a lot of pain in our communities, you know, in our children, in their eyes. You can see it, you know, you can sense it. That there's an urgency to really pay attention to what we're doing as parents and what we're doing as a community.
That's right. Yep. And I love your focus on wellness too. Let's get upstream from the crisis and build resilience and strength among all community members. So when these really tough times hit, we've got a stronger safety net to fall into so that we don't suffer so much. So tell us a little bit more about you. I'm connecting my world of listeners to your world of listeners, and they would love to hear the story that I got the privilege of hearing at the DAD 2.0 Summit earlier this year. So please share some of your pathway with us.
So a little bit about me. I honestly don't even know where to start, but I can tell you this. It's been one heck of a journey, okay? It's been one – I don't even know how I'm still alive. Actually, I do know why I'm still alive, and this is one of the reasons why I'm so happy to be on this call with you, because I want people to understand that they deserve to feel the same way. And when I – you know, when I was a kid, I grew up – my father was an alcoholic. He – domestic violence. He was an abuser, and he still is to this day. And, you know, my mom had suffered a lot of pain. Long story short, they were separate. They were separated, and I ended up in San Diego. My mom got remarried, and you know, I was navigating through the school system, you know, like any other child, struggling because I was behind and because of all the moving, and also, but I was very smart. I was always really attentive. It was like I wanted to be something. I wanted to do something, and it's easy. But it was so difficult because I had to come home to another alcoholic stepfather. I had to come home to a lot of reasons why I couldn't keep my grades up. So I had to swallow all that stuff inside me and figure out how to heal. And it wasn't until I became a teenager that I joined a program called Reality Changers. And Reality Changers was the program that helped first-generation college students go to college. But before that, it was actually supposed to be a program to get gang members out of gangs. And so, but it all evolved for the further progress of the communities. And, you know, I was able to get myself into a UCSD, being the first person in my entire family to graduate. And it was almost impossible, but I did it. I made it. You know, I was a teen. By the time I was 17 years old, I had a daughter. Her name was Alexa. I became a father really young. So, you know, I figured out that the reason why I decided to become a dad so young was because I felt that I wanted my own family. I wanted something that I didn't have when I was growing up. So I think subconsciously it was so easy for me to find someone and fall in love and create something like that. I found someone as wounded as me. I found someone as hurt as me, and we both thought it was beautiful. We were like, you know what, let's do something bigger. And we were kids. You know, we were kids having kids. But we made it. We made it. And I ended up going to UCSD, which destroyed our relationship because the UC system really, really gets you. Like, the quarter system got me. And I really didn't spend much time with my family. And so we separated. A lot of, you know, trauma going on, a lot of, you know, verbal abuse between each other, a lot of just things happening, and you know, we separated. So at the same time, I was dealing with my mom being deported in 2007, and never really having a lot of family support systems around me. And so, you know, despite the separation, my brother Marcus and I, we both continued to co-parent. I finally graduated. And then this whole thing with YouTube started by accident by doing a video with my daughter that went viral. We ended up on the Ellen
Show.
Can you
share a little bit about that part of your story a little bit more fully? Like, what prompted you to make the video, and kind of how's your understanding of how it went viral, and what do you think made it so popular, and what did it mean to you?
Well, initially when I did it, because I love the song so much. I thought it was a beautiful song to sing with my daughter, and I was going through a relationship at the time, and when I first heard the song, I just thought it was like, wow, I loved it. Home is where I'm with you. So I felt it was the right thing to teach my daughter. And so my daughter and I, even at that time, we already had a really cool kind of relationship where I could just hang out with her, kind of like, you know, and even to this day, we have a really strong relationship. But I sang the song. The video just went viral by accident. And I mean, nothing's by accident, but I was on my way to a midterm. I'll never forget. I was on my way to a midterm at UCSD. And I get a call. I don't know how the heck they got my number, but it was Ellen DeGeneres' producer. And
wow.
I was like, what is going on? And like, it just boom, 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 boom. Light bulb. I was like, oh my God. So I went on a few shows. I continued to sing with my daughter. I put up some more songs. And then I hear people on the news, like, singing along with us. And I thought it was so cool. You know, I was like, oh my God. And you see, the thing is, at the time, my wife and I were already separated. We were already co-parenting in different homes. And we had two kids. So at that moment, I thought to myself, okay, why am I doing all this? What's going on? And I found out years later, the reason why I started doing that is because I was compensating for something that my father never gave me, which is attention, mm-hmm. which is love, which is mm-hmm. which is being present. And I felt responsible. I felt guilty. I felt like I needed to. But at the same time, I loved it, you know? So it was a combination mm-hmm. of things that made me want to continue to sing. And then I started vlogging. And I started recording my life as a dad. And I was like, you know what? I can make this into a living. So I graduated from UC San Diego with my degree. And instead of going to law school, and instead of going to grad school, I started becoming a YouTuber and advocating for, you know, just fatherhood and recording my life as a dad and just vlogging and just being sincere with my life with people. And I found that people were starting to follow me more, and they were starting to like what I do, and they started seeing that, oh my God, he's a good dad. But, you know, like, deep inside, I was like, you know what, I want to continue to show people, you know, because it's not just about me. Like, a lot of people were concerned about my wife not being in the picture. Did she die? And, like, it was a huge problem, you know. And I was like, you know what? I gotta show people that it's not. So I continued my life. I continued to do that. I had my degree. I had my mind in the right place. I loved what I was doing. I started to travel. I did a few commercials. I was on America's Got Talent with my daughter. And, you know, we're navigating through this whole new world, the wild, wild west. You know, the whole social media world starting up in 2013. And I'm like, whoa, okay, what now? What do we do? What's going on? How am I going to make a living out of this? How do I get paid to survive? This is not funny. I have a family. I have kids. I'm co-parenting. And you know what? At some point, I got to start paying child support. So what's going on? What am I going to do? So I decided to kill two birds with one stone. I was struggling with a lot of things inside myself, and I was also finding a way to become a better father. And I did it, and I mean that. I started getting involved with a program at my daughter's school called the Neighborhood House Association. It was a fatherhood program through them, nonprofit. And I started volunteering, and then I realized that I could maybe get a job like this, maybe helping other dads, and at the same time, maybe helping myself. What I found, what I discovered, is that the way that I deal with pain, the way that I deal with depression, the way I deal with my anger and sadness, is by redistributing that energy and giving it back to other people in a positive way. And so I thought it was a really interesting way of thinking, because the name of my channel is called Reality Changers, Changing Reality. So I was like, okay, this is perfect. It's all synchronized. So I got a job. I ended up getting a full-time job at a nonprofit called Save San Diego. The program was called Dad's Corps, and it was a fatherhood program, and I became the administrator, and I was the outreach guy. I was the guy that was in charge to talk to the mayor about fatherhood. I was the guy that would go to the WIC programs and ask them, hey, why aren't there any posters of dads in here? I was the guy that was trying to encourage the city and the people that I would talk to be more inclusive with fathers. And so at the same time, I was co-parenting, And, mm-hmm. you know, I was co-parenting with the mother, like my kids. She was happy for me, but she was also very, you know, as she was seeing the change in me, I was seeing the change in her, and we were both very, very loving to our kids. We loved them so much that I think at some point we were competing against each other. It was really weird, and like it was very toxic. But you know, I throughout the time that we were separate, we learned a lot from each other. We learned a lot about our pain. She had her own support system. I had my own support system. And I wanna go back to that, but just keep focusing on the word support system, okay? So mm-hmm. I go back to work. I'm helping dads. I'm on the phone with them, and I can't express to you how difficult it was to get on the phone with these dads. How difficult it was to go to Donovan State Prison and encourage dads to realize that it's not about them. It's about their kids. I mean, it was just a huge awakening for me, and it reminded me of my father. It reminded me of my purpose, and I realized I really need to step it up as a co-parent. I really need to step it up as a father. I really need to step it up as a son. And at the same time, I was also doing YouTube videos. So I was vlogging to be a dad. I was going to stores. I was traveling. I was going to China, Australia. I was going to all these places and really genuinely showcasing who I really was. So the person that I've become online was also the same person that I was offline. And I was mm-hmm. trying really hard to keep it that way. And the reason why, because it's important for people to see that the person that's online is the same person that's offline. Because many times you sit around, a lot of people are always faking the phone. They're always not authentic. And
hey, Jorge.
Totally, yeah.
Hold on one sec. You're just starting to cut out in and out a little bit. I'm just wondering if you can find a little bit stronger connection somehow.
Yeah.
So let me just stop you there for a second because this is really, really great. And really, it is such a model for how people can cope with some pretty unimaginable early and chronic trauma that they experience. So I'm just wondering if you can go back a little bit and help us connect the dots that young. Yeah, it's better. Yep. From that young kid who, you know, maybe felt unsafe and maybe a little hopeless about the situation, like what was the impetus for that kid to find this resilience that connected you to all these other opportunities?
Honestly, it was my upbringing. It was my choices to choose to do better. So I, you know what, this is going to be really, really funny to tell you because I haven't mentioned this to anybody else but my family and a few people. But I just realized why I'm the way I am, and it's because of two things. Obviously, a lot of things, but two main things that kept me alive: Jim Carrey and Goku from Dragon Ball. And I'm going to explain why. So Jim Carrey, his characters were so funny, were so good. They were so good that they made me laugh, and I really took that to heart. I took his characters to heart, his Ace Ventura, and his The Mask. And the reason why is because, you know, this is a man who has dealt with depression, has dealt with pain, and he still is. But somehow he finds a way to make people happy. Same thing with Robin Williams, you know. So mm-hmm. so Goku, Dragon Ball, the guy from the anime, he was a lover for his. The reason why he fought, the reason why he continued to fight and continued to compete is because he loves his friends and his family. So I took that to heart when I was a kid. So it helped me cope with all the pain and all the anger, all the trauma, all the violence that I was witnessing as a kid. I saw so much violence when I was a kid that I really didn't know. I don't even know how I'm alive today. I don't know how I didn't become a drug dealer. I don't know how I didn't become, you know, I ended up in jail. I don't understand, but I realized that it has to do with a good support system, good choices, and praying, you know, and I don't know, it's just having the courage to change your reality, you know? So going back to the nonprofit is that moment of realization, going to all these prisons, going to all these programs, I realized myself that I was dealing with a lot of anger towards my father. So it was a combination of the program, it was a combination of counseling, it was a combination of going to sweat ceremonies with Native Americans that helped me find myself, find that inner happiness. It took a long time. It took a very, very long time to my.
Can you share a little bit? Yeah, could you share a little bit more about the sweat ceremonies and what those experiences were like for you, and how they helped you?
Yeah. So when I was at UCSD, I had a friend growing up, a childhood friend. His name is Gustavo, and his cousin ran these sweat ceremonies. And these aren't the ones that people charge you for. These aren't the ones that, like, oh, you know, charge $1,000 for this and experience. No, this is like the most authentic, the most real, the most honest. We build the sweat ceremony. We go out into the forest and we cut down some of the willow trees just to create, just to make one. Like, and they taught they taught me the value of community, the value of being in solidarity with people's causes, to be in solidarity with your inner child, you know? So that, and all the other things that I just mentioned to you, and the system was what kept me together and what still keeps me together to this day. So, you know, going back to the program, you know, leaving the program because it ran out of funding, I was very upset. I was very sad to know that the country was kind of going towards, like, taking funding out of nonprofits and taking funding out of wellness programs, especially fatherhood. So I went back to YouTube full time, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to push this hard. I'm going to continue. I'm going to find a way to make this full time. So I've been doing this full time since 2011, like I said, but now I am still. And my focus is to unite families and to engage fathers. And that's what I've been trying to advocate through my channel. Of course, I'm having fun. If I died right now, I would die happy knowing that I did so much for myself, for my family, for my kids. I experienced so much and I learned so much. So it brings us to this moment, right? Which is having a conversation about trauma and all the things that I've been through and what is happening around us right now. I mean, just a few days ago, one of the most well-known singers, XXXTentacion, he got shot. He was killed in a car. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because my daughter was one of her biggest fans. And here I am thinking, why am I bringing this up today to you? It's because this man was able to redistribute his anger, his pain, his depression. Despite all the stuff that he did do, he was able to create music to help other people. And it just goes to show that, like, sometimes even the ones that are in a lot of pain, that you just can never tell. You can never tell who's in pain, who's depressed, who's sad, who has trauma. It's like an invisible disease that nobody sees until it's too late. And I felt it was very urgent for me to continue to advocate on my channel, teach my kids, this is the most important part, teaching my daughters to empower themselves, to show them how to be good people and to show respect for each other. And I mean, the way that I talk to you right now, Sally, is the way that I talk to my kids. I don't beat around the bush. You know, if you had a conversation with my daughters right now over the phone, they would sound just like me. And the reason why is because my wife and I, my wife and I did get back together, and we have a son now. After 6 years, we got back together. We realized all the things we were going through, and we set aside our anger and we got married. So,
that's so cool.
I know it's crazy, but, like, I mean, I'm telling you, there's so many layers of stories, like, and I haven't even talked to you about my mom's immigration story and, like, crossing the border with her and meeting President Barack Obama. That's a whole other story. But, like, focusing back on family, focusing back on us, is we're united, we're better because we chose to, but also because we had a lot of support system around, a lot of loved ones, even her ex-boyfriends. You know, this is going to be weird for you to hear from me, but her ex-boyfriends and my ex-girlfriends and my former friends, they all taught me to become a better person. Mm-hmm. And and somehow, some way, we found each other again, you know. And I express to you in words how much love woman. She's a good-hearted woman who's right now dealing with lupus. But, like, I just can't. I can't express to you in words. Like, I can't live without her. You know, she's literally my other half. I'm like the dad that's like super blah blah blah. I'm like a butterfly. You know, I love dancing. I love going to raves. I really do love going to concerts. I love going to live music. I love going to conventions. I love talking to people. I love talking. I love listening. And she's very opposite. She's, like, very reserved. She's very collected. Mm-hmm. She's more from the country. She's like a country girl, you know? And she gives me this, like, she grounds me so much. She helps me so much as a person, and I help her. And she's like, we call each other, she's a tornado to my volcano, you know? And
that's right. And
we, to this day, we're not perfect. You know, we have our ups and downs. We had an argument just a few days ago. But, dude, the way we bounce back from these arguments have gotten so much better. Like, the other day, instead of, like, picking on her and saying, well, why did you do that? I just went up to him like, babe, hey, how are you? How are you doing? Like, I've learned to not be angry and go, hey, how are you feeling today? You know? And it's really changed the energy in my house. And but it goes back to us, you know, it goes back to wanting to choosing
yeah.
to, and to having
right.
the right support system. So,
and the skills, not, sometimes people don't have
yeah.
the skills to do it, but they can learn it. I just want to go back again to, you know, thinking about the kids at the border that are going through trauma right now. You know, what are your thoughts on what we can do to help them, or what would you want to say to them?
Again.
I said, but what are your thoughts on how we might help those kids who are experiencing tremendous amounts of trauma right now at the border, or what would you want to say to them about how they can live through it?
So, you know what, here's a few things you can do. One, I think you need to stop protesting shelters because the kids are getting scared. I mean, why are people going straight to the shelters? What we need to do is to understand that these children are children regardless of where they come from, regardless of how they got here. I understand why people are concerned, because there are people who are using the situation and taking advantage and coming into this country and any other country to do certain bad stuff. But no, what we need to do is to remember that these could be our children. These could be our neighbors. And we have to show them solidarity. I mean, everything that is happening right now is exactly what could happen to us, what happened back in World War II with Hitler. I'm not even kidding to you.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
as a historian myself, because I did ethnic studies, I see it happening. And it's very, very sad. But I also understand the importance of protecting each other, the importance of taking care of our country. But what we need to remember is that instead of saying, well, you know, When somebody goes to jail in our country and their kids are stripped away, we understand too. So why is it any different for them to be in a shelter? It's like we're playing oppression Olympics, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's fair for us to use these children as leverage for political agenda. I think these children need to be okay. I mean, look, let's be honest. Why do people want to leave this country? Why are people leaving their country? You have to ask yourself. There are people that could wait in line. There are people that need to have to wait in line for a reason. That's fine. 10, 20 years, 5 years, wait in line. I get it. We have one of the most flexible, actually, the United States has some of the most flexible immigration laws in the world compared to like Spain and Japan. But that doesn't mean we can't show solidarity. So there are people that want to come to this country that they have to. They have no other choice. They have a gun put to their head. They're running out of food. Dude, why not? Why can't we do that? It's a lie that we're running out of jobs. It's such a lie. I mean, dude, this we're so powerful in this country that I just think that we're being lied on both fronts, not just the Republican, but also from the Democrat. The whole political spectrum is a game, and it makes me sad that we can't put people first, put families first. And as an
mm-hmm.
advocate for families, as an advocate for people that love each other, I focus on them. I focus on the children.
Yep.
And if you want to help them the right way. You know, yes, call your senators. Yes, call them. But even that, like the trust that the people have on our government right now is so unbelievably low that it's almost difficult for people to want to get involved. I mean, look at the voter turnout for the primaries. Oh my God, it was horrible. So there's a reason why this is happening. This is dangerous. It's dangerous to us. And I don't think people realize how close we are to anarchy and chaos. I don't think people understand how close we are to being homeless. Like when you see someone in the streets or a child or a man in the streets, I don't think people understand how close we are to that, you know, unless it happens to us. So if we show love for them now, if we care about them now, first, we're going to be okay. Our spirit and our soul are going to be okay. So that's what I think about the whole situation.
You know, as someone who has also lived through, you know, some similar types of trauma, and the long-term trauma of a violent home, what do you think the effects of trauma are on children? What are your thoughts from your lived experience of, you know, the impact that it had on you and your sense of yourself and safety and the world and trusting adults and all of that?
I think we need to do a better job to build trust with our children and allow them to be part of the decision making and show them that they are loved and that their opinion is valid. I think that we're so focused as a people to be right that we forgot to do the right thing. And I feel like the social conscience of our country is at an unbelievable low, and it's affecting our children. I mean, I'm telling you, like, my daughters come home and they make these weird jokes about Trump, and they make these weird jokes about how kids are bullying them. And I'm just like, my daughter's not supposed to be thinking about this. Why are we talking about the president? I don't remember talking about the president so much. Why are we so – what is going on, you know? And it worries me as a citizen of this country, and it worries me as a father, because here I am making a YouTube channel, teaching my kids to be entrepreneurs, showing them to be empowered women, showing them not to get raped, showing them how to stand up for themselves. I'm literally trying to teach these kids how to survive, you know? And it's really sad that I have to focus on that instead of focusing on thriving as a family. I'm teaching my kids from the bottom of my heart how to be better, but I'm concerned about them because I feel like they're going to fall behind, you know? Like, it's that bad. And I think people need to see that. I don't care if you're from the Midwest. I don't care if you're from the South. I don't care if you're from the East. I don't even care who you believe in, who you don't believe in. I don't care what the political affiliation is. What matters right now is the social consciousness of our country for the future of our children.
Yes. Wow, that's really powerful, Jorge. Thank you. And I also love that one of your main instruments of doing this, of building social consciousness and community, is through your music. Can you talk a little bit about the role that music has played in your healing, in your identity, and in your connection to others?
So music has always been an avenue of a way to express myself. And I think music is a powerful way to feel loved, to feel happy, to let go of anger. And if you ever come to my house, we have instruments everywhere. Whether we play them or not, they're just available. And the reason why is because sometimes I feel like my children need a little bit of just something to do when they're bored. And I want to fill those gaps. So music is such a perfect way to fill in the gap, you know? And that's why I sing to my kids. I sing to them because it's a form of medicine. I sing to them and I take them to concerts. I even go to raves. Do you know what a rave is? It's like
I do.
Okay. It's like a giant Woodstock, basically, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like a modern Woodstock. So I purposely go to those just to let go of all, just to decompress and let go of all the things that I have to let go of and come back home to my family. I enjoy it from 8 in the morning till 8 at night. And the reason why I'm teaching my kids to be that way is for them to remember that this is part of their humanity, to dance, to feel free. That is something that they were given to them from God, from nature, from wherever you think. And I think music is such a perfect way to express themselves, their voice, their dancing. I mean, if you pay attention, I mean, you know, you may or may not like the music that's going on right now. I mean, a lot of us really don't, but some of these kids like it. So as long as I'm teaching them to properly express themselves and show and respect people through music, I think music is a beautiful instrument for healing.
Yeah, it's a really great way to build community, too. Can you talk about how, you know, the viral aspects of your YouTube video are in large part about the music that you provided, and people are attracted to that and have those shared experiences together. Can you talk about the community aspect of the healing power of music?
I think the fact that I sing to my kids and I share my life with the world builds community. I feel like people can relate. People can go, oh my God, thank you for reminding me to be present. You know, I get a lot of these comments on my videos. Hey man, like I love your videos. They make me happy. And I feel like that builds community. And on top of the community, as my Instagram and social media community platforms, they grow, so does my need to be there for other people. So I actually every year I attend, you know, a retreat. And I try to go to as many retreats as possible where I learn how to organize and how to bring people together. Not to protest, but just to understand how we can be connected. And, you know you have it good when you can easily make eye contact with people. I mean, come on, how many people that are listening to me right now can genuinely have a conversation with somebody and make genuine eye contact? Not a lot of people. It's intimidating. Mm-hmm. So I purposely go out there and talk to people and just invest in time with them. And I organize like private screenings, and I collaborate with brands to find a creative way to build community. For example, I'm a kid, right? So I'm a little kid sometimes. I love playing Pokemon. I love playing Pokemon. I'm like level 40. I have some of the top Pokemon on my game. It's a big augmented reality game right now in the world. And I thought to myself, how can I build community with this? So I found a community in San Diego, and I took my kids with me, and I learned about how this helps people, how it, you know, it's an addicting game, I have to admit, like any game, but it's fun. It's so engaging. You can bring your family out. And I thought, oh, my God, with my expertise in bringing people together, let's create an event. So I created an event with Sprint, and we did this whole cool event with a few other YouTubers, and it was amazing. So that's my way of finding a way to create memories and families coming together. And it was such a good experience. So stuff like that, out of this platform, I'm able to create campaigns, create events, create things, create moments that encourage people to go, hey, you know what? I want to go outside. You know what? Hey, let's take our kid out to the lake. Hey, you know what? Let's go to this place and let's put our phones away and let's reconnect. You know? So I have this mentality now every day, every single day, that there's so much good you can do. And it's hard to explain, Sally, but it's like I feel the need to be there for people and to be connected to them and remind them that they're beautiful, remind them that they're amazing. And it just opened up a whole new way of thinking for me. And going back to the community, when I was at a 2 weeks ago, I was familiar with her. Her name is Amma. I was recommended by a friend to attend a conference, and her name was Amma. She's a huge spiritual leader in India. She's considered a saint in India. And what she does is she goes around the world and she hugs people. She does a lesson. Mm-hmm. She teaches a lesson. She talks about all this like powerful lesson, and then she hugs people. That's all she does. I don't think she has any magical power. I don't really think she's. I'm not really a person who like idolizes people or like, you know, I'm not like a. I don't know if this is the right word. Like, I'm really driven by a religion. I'm more driven by God and what is purpose with me, you know? And I feel like this lady helped me augment whatever's going on inside of me. And ever since then, I've been so concerned about my nephews. I've been so concerned about my daughters. I've been concerned about my wife, my kids. I feel like I have a purpose to be there for people, you know? And and I feel so urgent about it. And, you know, sometimes I feel like I don't even sleep. But I think it's important, because we're in a time right now where we have to be there for people, you know? And, you know, yesterday I hosted a private screening for the Jurassic World, which is, by the way, it was one of my favorite movies. I loved it. It was so much fun.
Good. I can't wait. I'm going to go with my family on Saturday. I'm excited, too.
It's
Tell us.
I thought that I think it was better than the previous, but I was given tickets to give away to my fans, and what I did instead, I gave some to my fans, but I invited a nonprofit called American Services Committee. American Friends Service Committee gave them 4 tickets because they're the ones helping the kids at the border. So they're helping, like, organizing and trying to write letters for the congressman. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to invite some of the staff to come out and take a break and be with their families. So I did, and they came. I also invited another nonprofit, Senator Positive Angel, from Escondido, brought 4 kids, all of them dealing with PTSD, trauma, and a bunch of other things. Brought them up. I also invited a law firm, and I even met some military veterans. Every time I meet a military veteran, I always say thank you. And I mm-hmm. brought them in, and that's the idea. That's how
right.
I find a way to build, to create community, because the more that I push it out there, the chances of that person doing the same to somebody else is going to be much higher.
Wonderful. So I'm going to ask you for your top 3 takeaways for people who are experiencing trauma in just a second. But I want you to I remember when you were speaking at the Dad Summit, you really talked about kind of having this moment where you had resolve that you were going to do fatherhood differently. And I was just wondering if you could walk us back to that point in your life where you had that moment where you realized, like, it was up to you to be the kind of father that maybe you didn't have, that you had an opportunity for that. Was there a moment there that you can remember having that insight or that sense of resolve?
When I was 4 years old, actually, no. So I know you heard my story when I was at about my dad and how I grew up with abuse, but I've had many moments like that. The earliest moment that I had was when I was 4 years old. I was live in a place called El Hoyo, which is the hole. It's called Hole in English, in East LA. It was a really bad neighborhood at the time. And I would run away from my house, just go to the park by myself. I would walk this little dirt trail parallel to the 110 freeway, I think, one of the oldest freeways in LA. And I would go there and spend the entire day there because I didn't want to be home. And you know why I didn't want to be home? Because my dad and my mom were always fighting. My dad was always drunk. So I came back one day, and I was on my way back home, and I stopped by this little bush, and I found these little ladybugs, and I was playing with them, and I just felt so good to, like, just be hugged by all the little ladybugs. I can still remember that moment as a kid, just, like, playing with the ladybugs. And then I would let them go. I went back home. I walked inside the house. My dad and mom were fighting, and my dad had a gun to my mom's head, and he told me to get into the house. I went to bed, and I was just watching. I was just staring at my mom, at my dad, almost killing my mom. And my mom was begging my dad just to not kill her in front of me. She kept staring at me. She kept staring and looking at me. And my dad finally decided not to do it. And at that moment, I realized that I didn't want to be that way. I don't know why. I can't explain it to you, but something inside of me was like, I can't live like that. You know, something told me. I don't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
At that age, I didn't understand, but I did. And it struck a chord. And it ended up finding out that years later, that moment affected the way that I loved, affected the way that I made friends, affected the way that I got in a relationship, affected the way that I was in school, affected everything, you know?
Yep.
I had to find a way to deconstruct that trauma all these years. And then when I made my speech on stage, I called my mom after, and she told me that I wasn't 4 years old. I was actually 2 years old when that happened. I was almost 2 to 3 years
old. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So I'm thinking to myself, how the heck could I be that young and I could remember all that? You know? And it just goes to show, Sally, it just goes to show that trauma is very, very deep within your soul. It can get to you, and it can stick with you for the rest of your life. And what does that mean? It means that it can't go away. And I can tell you right now, it's never gone away. I've learned to cope with it. I've learned to grab that and bend it and make it something else. But it took a long time for me to do that. And I feel like because of those moments, I'm a better person. I'm stronger. I feel like I'm a kid for people, especially domestic violence. I'm more aware of what I don't do. I'm aware of what I do. And it's not. I'm not saying go over there and get some trauma on your life. No. I'm not saying that.
No.
Dude, we don't have to go through all that just to be happy. You know, like I don't think people understand carrying trauma, whether it's depression or suicidal thoughts. It's literally something we live with for the rest of our lives, and we have to learn to accept that little black hole that's inside us all the time.
Wow. That's such a powerful story, Jorge. Thank you so much for sharing that. And then to have the insight that you were actually only two possibly mostly pre-verbal. I mean, all of that is, like you said, it was hitting your soul, and that you are now, like, honestly, the epitome of resilience to turn that early childhood, really difficult times into the kind of person you are today to help so many people in all the ways that you do, and to have a great time doing it. I could just tell from meeting you that you are a person that's also full of joy and celebration and fun, and so it's been an honor chatting with you. So let me just kind of go back and recap a little bit about some of the themes that we've been talking about, and then I'm going to come back to you and just see if you have any words of wisdom, maybe like three things that you would like to leave our listeners with, especially those that are living with some significant, especially early childhood trauma, of how they might also kind of bend and to grab and bend those experiences and turn them into a redemptive part of their life story. So we started off the conversation. You shared a little bit about kind of this early childhood experience of violence and alcoholism, and you said it's a miracle I'm still here, and that early on that you really had a mindset of resilience, and we started to see that as soon as you were growing up and had a vision for yourself of going to college, a vision for yourself of having a family. And then all of a sudden you trip into this world of fame, which is kind of funny and also really cool. And you noticed, you had the insight to notice that all of this attention that you were getting and being loved by basically strangers was actually filling this need for you from that small child that didn't feel loved or that didn't feel safe. But somehow, again, in your young, wise mind, you knew that you had to tame this wild, wild west experience of being this famous social media person to really focus on priorities, which for you were about being a father and then also helping others become better fathers and uniting with their families. And so that part of your story is just so beautiful. And it really speaks to the importance of the healing qualities of what we call reciprocity, right? Like, I got your back, you got my back, and I loved how you talked about it, redistributing your pain through the energy of helping others and being advocates for dads, so that they didn't have to, kind of stumble around or not be included in some of the parenting stuff that the women were getting. I love that you have also dedicated and are being very mindful about your position of influence, that you are very authentic and that you're kind of showing us the real deal, the vulnerability, the family moments, and that you really are doing that so that you can model for people, hey, it's not easy, but there's a way through, and we can do it better together. I also loved your very touching story about, when I asked you what got you through, and you talked about these two things that kept you alive, Jim Carrey as a person of inspiration who you knew went through pain but still made others laugh. And then I'm not familiar with this character, but the Goku Dragon Ball who, just laughs and loves friends and family. And for those two things, they were like your sparkle of hope in the darkness. I think about like Viktor Frankl and, how hopelessness we would sense would be in his situation in the prison camps. But he held on to this thread of hope that perhaps there was something else on the other side that he was meant to do. And that's kind of what I hear from you. I also love how you are intentionally creating communities and wellness practices, and you're also looking at kind of how other cultures do this or how we can do this through again, your power as an influencer, connecting to brands and event opportunities of how we can create really positive and empowering memories for people. I think, you know, in today's topic, today's, you know, focus on our current event around this collective trauma that we're experiencing, one of the things that, as you were talking, stuck out to me was that we're all impacted by this, not just the people on the front lines, the, you know, the families that are being torn apart, obviously at the epicenter of this, but the helpers, you know, the people that you invited to the screening, you know, helping them with their self-care. But also, you know, those of us in other parts of the country who are watching this, you know, are we being bystanders? Are we complicit to this? Or are we getting engaged in trying to do the right thing so that we are all part of this social consciousness that's trying to make the world a better place? I love that you use art as medicine. This is something that's really near and dear to me as I was a studio art major in college, and I do feel like mental health and it really needs the arts as a way to help people express themselves, and I love how you put it, that music is your medicine. And then thank you again for sharing that turning point story as really a toddler, seeing, you know, the love of these ladybugs. I think that's such a powerful metaphor of, you know, these innocent little creatures that they gave you that sense of connection and hope that then you, in your own child's mind, made resolve that you did not want to repeat the trauma for your future. And then I'm going to grab your piece here about grabbing and bending trauma and turning it into something else. That trauma is often deep within our souls and that we can do something different about it when we understand it. So thank you, Jorge, for all of that. It was absolutely beautiful. Do you have any takeaways for our audience, things that some maybe young people or people who have lived through childhood trauma like you have might learn from you, anything that you want to give them?
Oh, man. You know, I think a few things is, one is, look, the pain is never going to go away, and that's completely mm-hmm. okay, you know?
Okay.
I think we need to remember, we all of us that are going through pain, we need to remember that we're so incredibly powerful, and we don't really realize it. It's amazing. I know it feels like we're inside a maze, you know, inside a maze in our brains, and it can be scary. All of the stuff that we feel, it's all manifested inside a piece of meat inside our, and it's up to us to use our soul and our spirit to guide it. You know, there's, mm-hmm. I just feel like sometimes our brain is it's another person inside us, and they're doing their best to either push us away or protect us. And trauma, in my opinion, is what sometimes the brain does to survive, you know, but it's unfortunate that, you know, that some of us have gone through this, but I just want everybody to know that you guys are, all of you are beautiful, that you deserve to be loved, you deserve to be happy, and this world is ours. It's our children's, and, you know, I got my mom right now. My mom is in, I'm not even going to express to you, I mean, my mom is in a negative pressure room right now. She has E. coli, she has C. diff, she has breast cancer, and we don't know if she's going to survive, okay? Mm. And as I'm talking to you over the phone right now, I'm texting my mom and telling her that I love her and that she shouldn't give up. Why? Because sometimes the best medicine is to be there for other people.
Mm-hmm. Wow, thank you. And I think that's a really beautiful way to close, is that we just got to remind each other that each of us is beautiful and that we're there for each other. And I know that you have so much going on in your life right now, Jorge, so I really appreciate you making the time to come and speak to our audience about this very important and timely topic. I am I'm certainly inspired by you, and I hope that we continue to cross paths, whether through the fatherhood advocacy work or in other spaces. I'd love to, you know, continue to do some collaborative things with you, because you're really very special person. How do people find you?
And
if they don't know if they don't know where to find you, how do they find you?
You can find me on social media as a Reality Changers, as one word. Also, shameless plug, I'm still trying to raise money for my mom for her GoFundMe account her breast cancer
mm-hmm.
fund. So if any of you that are listening are willing to donate, I'm trying to get to 20,000 right now. I'm at 20,000 trying to get her, just to pay her rent, just to pay her car. That's it. Like, I'm just trying to help her get by, you know?
Sure. And how do people find the GoFundMe page? How do they find the GoFundMe page?
Just go to GoFundMe.com/, crap, I forgot the name.
That's right. You find it. I'll drop it in the show notes. Can I find it on your Facebook page or on your YouTube channel? Or?
Yeah, you can find me on my YouTube channel, but you can also find it on my Facebook page and just put GoFundMe.com/ Save My Mom From Breast. I think it's Save My Mom From Breast Cancer. Right? You know what? I have it right here. GoFundMe.com/ Save My Mom. Okay, this is GoFundMe.com. Let me start over. So you can go to GoFundMe.com/ Save My Mom From Breast Cancer. And if you can
help donate
and get us to our goal, it would go a long, long, long way.
Thank you. Great. Any other resources or things we can lead our listeners to who might be experiencing trauma? Any other resources that you're aware of or nonprofits that could help?
Dance. Go to festivals. Just be happy. Just cry if you need to. Just look happy. You know, tap into your inner child. Tap into it and just talk to yourself. Talk to that little boy or little girl inside you. And that, I think that's just the most beautiful thing you can do to help yourself.
Nice. Great. So again, thank you. I hope the listeners go out of this and really as inspired as I am by Jorge's story and all the great work he's doing now to advocate for families and communities and wellness. It's exactly where we need to be. So if this is your first episode with us, I really encourage you to subscribe to the Hope Illuminated podcast. We would love you also to share this episode with other folks that might be benefiting from some tips on how to cope with trauma and how to get engaged in your community. If you could leave a rating and review on iTunes, it certainly helps us a lot to connect with new listeners. And if you go to SallySpencerThomas.com, you can sign up for the newsletter so you can learn more about some of the other things we're doing. We have a Twitter chat tonight, also involving some folks from the Dad 2.0 Summit community. We're talking about divorce and healing and thriving and starting over for men. So join us tonight. That would be at the 8 o'clock Eastern time, hashtag Elevate the Combo. We also have webinars and blogs and all kinds of stuff that really focus on resilience and wellness. So thank you, Jorge. Thank you, listeners. In closing, let's open our hearts. Let's change our thinking and let's take action to save lives. Together, we can restore dignity and sustain a passion for living.
Deck season rolls around every year. Staining your deck shouldn't. That's why the Home Depot now carries number one rated Olympic stains, including Olympic Max from only $33.98 a gallon. It's a brand trusted for over 80 years to protect season after season. So do it right with Olympic, and next year, you won't have to do it at all. Olympic Stain, for the first time at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Number one rating from an independent consumer study. U.S. only. See store for details.